Good morning, Saints. Pastor Eli James and Pastor Steve here. This is Eurofolk Radio Bloodlines for June 16, 2019. And even before we start today's show, which is going to be about the Herodians, part three or four, I forget which it is, we have some banging going on in the background.
No, I was dusting off the other computer.
Oh, okay.
And the views and opinions expressed on this show may or may not
be to your liking.
Yeah, right? Well, okay. So this
you're
is
not
the
to our liking
show.
Either.
Caution. Caution.
The views expressed on Eurofolk Radio might be agitational.
Alert!
Might be
alert.
Anti-Jewish.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, 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 Will Robinson. Danger, danger.
The fact is, when you have 10 Israelites in one room, you're going to have 10 different opinions, right?
Surely not.
Right? On just about everything. Yeah, I like that. Brother Aber says, castration for pedos in Alabama, but legalized prostitution, child prostitution in California. Wow. Can the
That's
country be more divided?
Let move out of California.
There you go. Into Alabama. Right?
Into Alabama. Mm-hmm. You know, and they'll starve to death in
the
California.
South will rise
all
again.
If all the good white people move out, the dregs of society will rule like they do in L.A. It's a death zone.
Absolutely.
Just like those Hollywood movies, you know.
Yeah, so before we get back into Josephus.
Escape from L.A.
Yeah, right. I like it. Right. So yesterday on One-to-One, Pastor Steve and I did a show about the Roman banking system, showing that the Babylonian banking system of Mystery Babylon was fully engaged already in those days, in the days before Christ even. And it's part of what brought the Roman Empire down. Funny money, you know, the fiat money system. And that has not changed. That began with Babylon, the third empire of the eight beast system described in the book of Revelation, and has survived down to this day. It's called Mystery Babylon, Revelation chapter 17 and 18. Okay, it's clearly explained in those two chapters of Revelation what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a world empire of merchants based on usury and inflation money. That's what it's based
merchants,
on.
Merchants? You blame the merchants. Aye.
Right, right. And it's amazing how so few, almost none, of the Judeo-Christian theologians ever talk about this. And they don't even think that the Antichrist is already here. They think the Antichrist is still coming. No, I'm sorry, folks. It's been here for the last 2,000 years.
Well, the system, the Antichrist system.
Mm-hmm. It's been,
there may be a distinct individual leader.
Oh, yeah, Hillary?
in the future.
Yeah.
But
great whore?
The actual beast is the system itself.
Yes, yes. It's the empire of merchants, as it clearly states in the book of Revelation.
Yahweh's order of arrangement versus the Satan. Order of arrangement.
Right, right. And then at the same time, the secular world doesn't understand it because they don't understand the Bible and don't want to understand the Bible. They actually think that Jews are God's chosen people, or at least they take that claim seriously. So, and so do the Judeos. So the fact is, outside of Christian identity, there is hardly anyone who understands the Bible at all. Okay, they don't understand the
beast. Well, they are God's chosen people.
Yeah,
it just depends on what he chose them for.
The guy from down below, right?
Read the book of Obadiah.
Right.
I'll tell you what Yahweh wants to do.
Amen, amen. Yeah, so that was the thrust of yesterday's One-to-One show. I highly encourage everybody to download it and listen to it, because this is, this is what we've got going today. It's the true source of all evil, debauchery, you know, the jewels, money, I'm trying to think of a word for, you know, how evil Hollywood is and all the degeneracy, child prostitution, child porn, you know, gays. It's all in there. That's what the fornications of Mystery Babylon are all about. But it's all based on the money system. Okay. And they finance
the money system
with it.
Supports all those.
Exactly.
Things.
Exactly. And if you don't understand that, you simply do not understand the book of Revelation. Okay. Mm-hmm. So,
there's a lot of people that don't understand a lot of things.
Right. Right. And on Tuesday, we're going to, on Wednesday, with Pastor Andrew, the three of us are going to analyze the 1,000 years of when they were cast down into the bottomless pit. We'll do a thorough prophetic analysis of the bottomless pit and who was thrown down into the bottomless pit and when they were released. Okay, and it has to do with, hint, hint, Esau, folks. Esau, all right? All right, very good. Okay, so, Pastor Steve, where did we leave off last week?
We were in Book 18, Chapter 4, mm-hmm. Section 5 of Jewish Antiquities.
Right, the Judahite Antiquities, Judean, properly translated Judean.
Well, people will be looking in the book for, and it says Jewish Antiquities.
Right. Now, it's interesting. Now, we left off in Section 4 where the Parthians and the Romans were at war with one another. And most people don't know anything about the Parthian Empire at all. But the Parthians were ruled by Pharez Judah, not Zerah Judah. Rome was actually ruled by Zerah Judah, people who forgot their Israelite ancestry. Right. And Parthia was ruled by Pharez Judah, and they had to have at least a smattering, at least the leadership had to have a smattering of understanding that they were descended from Judah. So Parthia is, in fact, Parthia, Peretz, folks. They were a tribe of Judah, okay?
That's right.
All right, and so you have two factions of the house of Judah making war against each other. And, of course, the Parthians are the ones who sent the wise men to pay homage to our Lord and Savior Yahshua Messiah because they were his kinsmen. They understood they were his kinsmen. All right, and so we pick it up here with this war between the Parthians and the Romans, and the leader of Parthia, Artabanus, he raised a great army out of the Dahe and Sake and fought with his enemies and retained his principality. So, who are the Dahe and the Sake? Well, the Sake are obviously the Saxons, the Anglo-Saxons. Mm-hmm. All right. The Dahe was...
Sacre. Okay.
Is that what they have in Europe?
Dahe.
Yeah.
And, I don't know who the Dahe were.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dacians, they were an offshoot of one of the 12 tribes. And, you know, we'll have to do a show and do research on it and find out who they were. Okay. So, let's pick it up in paragraph 5. If you will take us off into the world of Josephus, please.
Who are you? Oh, boy. Section 5. When Tiberius had heard of these things, he desired to have a league of friendship made between him and Artabanus. And when, upon this invitation, he received the proposal kindly, Artabanus and Vitellius went to the Euphrates. And as a bridge was laid over the river, they each of them came with their guards about them and met one another in the midst of the bridge. And when they had agreed upon the terms of peace, Herod the Tetrarch erected a rich tent on the midst of the passage and made them a feast there. Well, they had just a little canopy and...
Right. Yeah,
had a big
little whiskey,
meal and all.
A little whiskey, yeah, a little
little party, you know.
Right.
Artabanus also, not long afterward, sent his son Darius as a hostage. with many presents, among which there was a man 7 cubits tall.
Mm-hmm.
It says a Jew he was by birth.
A Judean by birth.
A Judean by birth. And yes. His name was Eleazar, who for his height was called a giant.
7 cubits. Okay, that's a cubit 23. Is about a foot and a half.
That's but 14 tall. Feet tall.
Yeah.
He had to be a Judean because he wasn't an Israelite. That's unnatural Israel.
Right. He was a Judean.
He had some kind of genes going on there, a little
gene
action.
Giant genes, some giant genes, Goliath-type genes, right?
After which, Vitellius went to Antioch and Artabanus to Babylon, but Herod the Tetrarch, being desirous to give Caesar the first information that they had obtained hostages, sent posts with letters wherein he had accurately described all the particulars and had left nothing for the consular Vitellius to inform him of. But when Vitellius's letters were sent, and Caesar had let him know that he was acquainted with the affairs already, because Herod had given him an account of them before, Vitellius was very much troubled at it, and supposing that he had been thereby a greater sufferer than he really was, he kept up a secret anger on this occasion until he could be revenged on him, which he was after Caius had taken the government. Okay. He got butthurt because he wasn't the first to...
Well, Herod stole his thunder.
Well, how much different is it today? They're all. If you make them look bad, they're going to get you.
Yeah, I wanted to tell Caesar, and you told him before I could get there. How dare you? Right?
I'm gonna get you.
My brownie point. You stole my brownie points.
Yeah.
Okay. Horrible. All right.
I'm supposed to be the chief suck up here, not
right?
you.
Exactly. Get in line. Okay, section 6. About this time it was that Philip, Herod's brother, departed this life. Okay, one of the tetrarchs died. In the 20th year of the reign of Tiberius. Okay, there's a footnote here. And maybe take a look at your footnote in your version, because your footnotes tend to be longer and have more information.
This calculation from all Josephus's Greek copies is exactly right, for since Herod died about September in the 4th year before the Christian era, and Tiberius began, as is well known, August 19th, A.D. 14, yeah. It is evident that the 37th year of Philip, reckoned from his father's death, was the 20th of Tiberius, or near the end of A.D. 33, the very year of our Savior's death also, or, however, in the beginning of the next year, A.D. 34.
Yeah.
This Philip the Tetrarch seemed to have been the best of all the posterity of Herod for his love of peace and his love of justice.
Okay, he was an unusual Jew.
He was a lazy Jew.
Better a lazy Jew than an active Jew. Okay, yeah, all right. So good, very good. So the death of Messiah confirmed to be in the year 33 A.D. I like it. Very good. Okay, after he had been tetrarch, that is Philip, of Trachonitis and Gaulonitis, and of the nation of the Batanaeans also, which we covered in great detail yesterday, 37 years, he had shown himself a person of moderation and quietness in the conduct of his life and government. He constantly lived in that country which was subject to him. He used to make his progress with a few chosen friends. His tribunal also, on which he sat in judgment, followed him in his progress. And when anyone met him who wanted his assistance, he made no delay, but had his tribunal set down immediately, wheresoever he happened to be, and sat down, almost like Solomon, and sat down upon it and heard his complaint. He there ordered, maybe he was not the son of Herod. Maybe Mariamne was fooling around. Anyway, he died at Julius. And when he was carried to the monument, which he had already erected for himself beforehand, he was buried with great pomp. His principality Tiberius took, for he left no sons behind him, and added it to the province of Syria, but gave order that the tributes which arose from it should be collected and laid up in his tetrarchy. Okay, so for the one of the tetrarchs is gone, and so it was divided. It was given to one of the other tetrarchs. I forget which. We'll find out probably in chapter 5. Back to you.
Yeah, well, I guess we should start chapter 5. Let me get a little hit of coffee here, brother. And Oh, that's
smack,
so good.
Smack. Okay.
Oh, boy.
The show Herod comes the with sound effects this morning, people. Let's continue. Chapter 5.
Okay. Not enough coffee yet. Herod right. the Tetrarch makes war with Aretas, the king of Arabia, and is beaten by him, as also concerning the death of John the Baptist.
Okay.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. How Vitellius went up to Jerusalem, together with some account of Agrippa and of the posterity of Herod the Great. All right, section 1.
Mm-hmm.
About this time, Aretas, the king of Arabia Petraea, and Herod had a quarrel on the account following. They fell out about this. Herod the Tetrarch had married the daughter of Aretas and had lived with her a great while. And when he was once at Rome, he lodged with Herod, who was his brother indeed, but not by the same mother. For this Herod was the son of the high priest Seroa's daughter. However, he fell in love with Herodias, that's his sister, this last Herod's wife, who was the daughter of Aristobulus, their brother, and the sister of Agrippa the Great. This man ventured to talk to her about a marriage between them, which address, when she admitted an agreement, was made for her to change her habitation and come to him as soon as he should return from Rome. One article of this marriage also was this, that she should divorce Aretas' daughter, or that he should divorce Aretas' daughter. I got...
This is confusing.
Sawdust on my
glass. Intermarriage and the incestuous relationships.
I mean, it was just, musical
beds. You have to have a chart to keep all this straight. Salome wind up being her own aunt through the various intermarriages, right? Ridiculous stuff. Back to you.
All right, so Antipas, when he had made this agreement, sailed to Rome, but when he had done there the business he went about, and was returned again, his wife having discovered the agreement he had made with Herodias, and having learned it before he had notice of her knowledge of the whole design, she desired him to send her to Machaerus, which is a place in the borders of the dominions of Aretas and Herod, without informing him of any of her intentions.
She slipped off into the night. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She disappeared.
Boy, this would make such a great soap opera. I can't believe a Jew hasn't actually done this, right?
Yeah. Right.
Too revealing.
Yeah, days of Herod's lies.
Yeah, there you go. The days of Herod's lies.
Okay. Right. Or days of
many
Herod's lies.
Spent in the hospital, right?
Well, he had those worms, and he used to go fishing
right?
a lot, so it was of a little benefit to him.
Exactly.
Accordingly, Herod sent her there, as thinking his wife had not perceived anything. Now, she had sent a good while before to Machaerus, which was subject to her father. And so all things necessary for her journey were made ready for her by the general of Aretas' army. And by that means, she soon came into Arabia under the conduct of the several generals who carried her from one to another successively, and she soon came to her father and told him of Herod's intentions.
Wow.
Uh-oh.
So she's like the parade queen at the Indy 500, right? Oh, wow, what a spectacle.
So Aretas made this the first occasion of his hostility between him and Herod, who had also some quarrel with him about their limits at the country of Gamalitis. That's camel land.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You understand? Gamal is camel.
Right. And itis is a disease. Camel disease.
A sick camel. Right.
There you go.
So they raised armies on both sides and prepared for war and set their generals to fight instead of themselves. Hey, Bill, go kick that guy's butt for me, will you? He's too big for me. And when they had joined battle, all Herod's army was destroyed by the treachery of some fugitives who, though they were of the tetrarchy of Philip, joined with Aretas' army. Another backstabbing. I mean, this is Peyton Place all over. Whoa.
Yeah. Man.
So Herod wrote about these affairs to Tiberius, who, being very angry at the attempt made by Aretas, wrote to Vitellius to make war upon him, and either to take him alive and bring him to him in bonds, or to kill him and send him his head.
Mm.
This was the charge that Tiberius gave to the president of Syria.
Wow.
Over to you.
Talk about conniving in the background, geez, backstabbing, cutting off people's heads, right? It's never ending. It's never, just like today, it's never ending. I mean, the crimes of the Hillary.
Well,
the
all these senators and stuff that have been dying because they were going to expose the pedophilia rings.
Right.
You know, they just dig out Arkansas.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, they may not be in office, but they have a lot of pull.
Yeah. So instead of the Herodians, we have the Clintonians today who are doing exactly the same thing. It's just as corrupt.
Man.
Unbelievable. Okay. All right, section 2. Now, some of the Judeans thought that the destruction of Herod's army came from God. And that was probably, those were probably Judahites who never liked the Herods anyway. And that very justly, as a punishment of what he did against John, that was called the Baptist. For Herod slew him, who was a good man, and commanded the Judeans to exercise virtue, both as to the right, actually to the Judahites, because John would not have told anybody but Judah to exercise virtue, to exercise righteousness towards one another and piety towards God, and so come to baptism. Remember, John refused to baptize the Sadducees and the Pharisees.
Yep.
Right? Didn't he want them to be saved?
Yep.
No, he didn't. Yep. No. Okay. So now, and for that the washing with water would be acceptable to him if they made use of it, not in order to the putting away or remission of some sins only, but for the purification of the body, supposing still that the soul was thoroughly purified beforehand by righteousness. Now, this is his interpretation, obviously. Now, but of course, you know, we're supposed to accept baptism with repentance, which means that you have an aim toward righteousness. Now, when many others came to the crowd about him, for they were greatly moved or pleased by hearing his words, Herod, who feared lest the great influence John had over the people might be put into his power, and inclination to raise a rebellion. Of course, John had no such intentions. For they seemed, but every one of these monarchs lived in fear of a rabble-rouser, right? Every last one of them, okay? That they couldn't sleep at night for this fear. And the same is true of Jews today, right? They're fearing that their empire is going to collapse at any minute. That's why they have to double down on their total control.
Persecution of
us. Persecution, right? Right? Totalitarian dictatorship. Trying
we
to
scare them
us.
To death.
Yeah, we sure do. They try to infringe on our freedom of speech constantly. Okay? In fact, I still have an active YouTube channel, Pastor Eli James YouTube channel, and they gave me a citation. They removed my, the show that I did on the Rothschilds causing the Civil War. It's been up there for like 4 or 5 years, and they finally found it and took it down and gave me a strike. All right, so I haven't been active in that for fear that they would take it down, right? So, so I'm going to be very careful what I put up there so they don't take down that channel entirely, okay? Because even if it's, milder Christian identity, it'll bring people to the message, right? We have people who teach a non-seedline version of identity, which brings people who are offended by the possibility that Eve was sexually seduced, and there's other people who have no problem with that, right? So we have different ways of bringing people into the fold, right? People come in by different paths. Okay, where was I? Now, crowd about him. Oh, yeah. Herod feared John because he thought he might be a rebel. For they seemed ready to do anything he should advise. Yeah, the people following John thought it best by putting him to death to prevent any mischief he might cause and not bring himself into difficulties by sparing a man who might make him repent of it when it should be too late. Accordingly, he was sent a prisoner out of Herod's suspicious temper to Machaerus, the castle I before mentioned, and was there put to death. Now, the Judeans had an opinion that the destruction of his army was sent as a punishment upon Herod and a mark of God's displeasure against him, and they were right.
Yep.
They were right. Okay, now this whole episode suggests that even though Herod was persuaded by Salome to cut off John's head, Herod was not inclined to favor him anyway. Okay?
Right.
Okay? Back to you.
Right. Touch not my anointed and do my prophets no harm.
Right.
Oh, well. Section 3. So Vitellius prepared to make war with Aretas, having with him 2 legions of armed men. He also took with him all his lightly armored troops and the horsemen which belonged to them, and were drawn out of those kingdoms which were under the Romans, and hurried for Petra, and came to Ptolemais. But as he was marching very busily, and leading his army through Judea, the principal men met him, and desired that he would not thus march through their land, for that the laws of their country would not permit them to overlook those images which were brought into it, of which there were a great many in their ensigns.
You have
pagan,
to stop
pagan
and genuflect at every station of the cross. Right.
They had those images.
That's right. 14 stations, by the way. And Petra, for those who might have been disbelievers, the Raiders of the Lost Ark in that movie, many scenes were filmed at Petra, proving that it was a real place and it still exists today. It was carved out of a bedrock in this very narrow valley. And it is a a monument of the Nabataeans. Okay, back right. to you.
So he was persuaded by what they said and changed that resolution of his which he had before taken in this matter. Whereupon he ordered the army to march along the great plain, while he himself, with Herod the Tetrarch and his friends, went up to Jerusalem to offer sacrifice to God, an ancient festival of the Judeans being then just approaching. And when he had been there and been honorably entertained by the multitude of the Judeans, he made a stay there for 3 days, within which time he deprived Jonathan of the high priesthood and gave it to his brother Theophilus. But when, on the fourth day, letters came to him which informed him of the death of Tiberius, he obliged the multitude to take an oath of faithfulness to Caius. He also recalled his army and made them every one go home and take their winter quarters there, since upon the devolution of the empire upon Caius, he did not have the same authority for making this war which he had before. It was also reported that when Aretas heard of the coming of Vitellius to fight him, he said, upon his consulting the diviners, that it was impossible that this army of Vitellius could enter Petra, for that one of the rulers would die, either he that gave the orders for the war or he that was marching at the other's desire, in order to be subservient to his will, or else he against whom this army is prepared. So Vitellius truly retired to Antioch, but Agrippa, the son of Aristobulus, went up to Rome a year before the death of Tiberius in order to attend to some affairs with the emperor, if he might be permitted so to do. I have now a mind to describe Herod and his family, how it fared with them, partly because it is suitable to this history to speak of that matter, and partly because this thing is a demonstration of the interposition of providence. In other words, godly hand. Right. Okay. Bearing a multitude of children is of no advantage, no more than any other strength that mankind set their hearts upon, in comparison with those acts of piety which are done toward God. For it happened that, within the revolution of 100 years, the posterity of Herod, which were a great many in number, were, excepting a few, utterly destroyed. And the footnote on this is, whether this sudden extinction of almost the entire lineage of Herod the Great, which was very numerous, as we're both here and in the next section informed, was not in part as a punishment for the gross incest they were frequently guilty of in marrying their own nephews and nieces,
just
well
like
deserved to be considered. See Leviticus 18:6 and 7, 21:10, and Noldius de Herod, number 269 and 270.
Okay.
Okay.
They're still doing
it. And here we go. One may well apply this for the instruction of mankind and learn from there how unhappy they were.
Despite their power and wealth.
Right. It would also show us the history
probably
of
right.
Agrippa. I got the two P's in Agrippa messed up with history, and it came out hippie. Agrippa, who was, as he was a Persian, most worthy of admiration, So was he from a private man, beyond all the expectation of those that knew him, advanced to great power and authority. I have said something of them formerly, but I shall now also speak accurately about them.
Okay, now that they're all dead, okay, I can vent. All right, section 4. Herod the Great had two daughters by Mariamne, the granddaughter of Hyrcanus. Okay, Mariamne, for all evidence at hand, was a pure-blooded Judahite woman. Okay. The one was Salampsio. That's a name I've never heard before. Salampsio, who was married to Phasaelus, her first cousin, who was himself the son of Phasaelus, Herod's brother, her father making the match. The other was Cypros, who was herself married also to her first cousin, Antipater, the son of Salome, Herod's sister. Okay, so you can see the incest going on here. It's pretty evident, okay?
Well, that gives a whole new meaning of close relations.
There you go. Yeah, and the Rothschilds do the thing. The same thing. They make sure that their sons intermarry with their cousins, female cousins. Ooh. Okay? Although there may be exceptions to that. All right, so where was I? Okay, Salampsio. Okay. Cypros and Herod's sister, Phasaelus, had five children by Salampsio, Antipater, Herod, and Alexander, and two daughters, Alexandra and Cypros, which last Agrippa, the son of Aristobulus, married, and Timaeus of Cyprus married Alexandra. He was a man of note, but had by her no children. Agrippa had by Cypros two sons and three daughters, which daughters were named Bernice, Mariamne, and Drusilla. But the names of these sons were Agrippa and Drusus, of which Drusus died before he came to the years of puberty. But their father Agrippa was brought up with his other brethren, Herod and Aristobulus, for these were also the sons of the son of Herod the Great by Bernice. Man, you need a chart to keep all this straight. But Bernice was the daughter of Costobarus and of Salome, who was Herod's sister. Oh, man.
And the head bones connected to the leg bone, right. And the leg bone connected to the eye bone, and the eye bone connected. Oh, man. You know,
I think that Amish do this kind of stuff, too. Aristobulus left these infants when he was slain by his father, together with his brother Alexander, as we have already related. But when they were arrived at the years of puberty, this Herod, the brother of Agrippa, married Mariamne, the daughter of Olympias, who was the daughter of Herod the king, and of Joseph, the son of Joseph, who was the brother of Herod a king. I think even Herod the Great needed to have a chart to keep all these people straight. Who's the heir? I have no idea. Who was the brother of Herod the king and had by her a son, Aristobulus. But Aristobulus, the third brother of Agrippa, married Iotape, the daughter of, my goodness, Sampsigeramus, king of Emesa. They had a daughter who was deaf, whose name also was Iotape. And these hitherto were the children of the male line, but Herodias, their sister, was married to Herod, Philip, son of Herod the Great, who was born of Mariamne, the daughter of Simon the high priest, who had a daughter Salome. Now, Simon the high priest may have been a pure-blooded Judahite and engaged in an illicit affair here. So he should have stayed out of the family of Herod, absolutely. But he may have been, you know, somebody named Simon who was not an actual Judahite. After whose birth, after the birth of Salome, Herodias took upon her to confound the laws of our country and divorce herself from her husband while he was alive and was married to Herod Antipas. Herod Antipas, her husband's brother by the father's side. He was Tetrarch of Galilee, but her daughter Salome was married to Philip, the son of Herod. Are you keeping notes, folks? the Tetrarch of Trachonitis. And as he died childless, Aristobulus, the son of Herod, the brother of Agrippa, the patriarch of another family, married her. They had three sons, Herod, Agrippa, and Aristobulus. And this was the posterity of Phasaelus and Salampsio. Man. But the daughter of Antipater by Cypros was Cypros. They should give their children different names so we can tell them apart. Whom Alexis.
Cypros 1 or something
right?
Like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. Alexis Celsius, the son of Alexis, married. I'm not even going to try to figure that out. They had a daughter, Cypros, another Cypros. But Herod and Alexander, who, as we told you, were the brothers of Antipater, died childless. As to Alexander, the son of Herod the king, who was slain by his father, he had two sons, Alexander and Tigranes, by the daughter of Archelaus, king of Cappadocia, the only good woman in the whole bunch, except for Mariamne. And, in fact, Mariamne was a pure-blooded Judahite, you know, who was basically forced to marry an Edomite Jew by the name of Herod. Alexander had a son of the same name with his brother Tigranes and was sent to take possession of the kingdom of Armenia by Nero. He had a son, Alexander, who married Yotape, the daughter of Antiochus, the king of Commagena. Vespasian made him king of an island in Cilicia. But these descendants of Alexander, soon after their birth, deserted their Mosaic religion, which they probably never believed anyway, and went over to that of the Greeks, paganism, because they were pagan Jews is what they were. But for the rest of the daughters of Herod the king, it happened that they died childless. And as these descendants of Herod, whom we have enumerated, were in being at the same time that Agrippa the Great took the kingdom, and I have now given an account of them, it now remains that I relate the several hard fortunes which befell Agrippa, and how he got clear of them and was advanced to the greatest height of dignity and honor. So Herod Agrippa, after Philip had died, and there was two other sons besides Agrippa still alive, as I understand it. Let's find out, Pastor Steve, chapter 6.
Oh, boy, that's like the old story. The fellow
visited my brother's sister.
the fellow visited this woman, and she had 14 children, all boys.
Really? Wow.
And he says, well, what's that one's name? And she says, Rastus. And he says, oh, okay, well, what's that one's name? He says, Rastus. And he says, well, what's that one's name? And she says, Rastus. And he said, well, how do you tell them apart? He says, oh, then I calls him by their last name.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Hey. Oh, well. Chapter 6.
There has to be some way to tell them apart. Sure, unless Herod himself had to keep a chart of his own children to tell them apart. Back to you.
No, he just had a royal stamp made, and he stamped them on the forehead. So when he's looking at them, he knew what to call them. Chapter 6. Of the navigation of King Agrippa to Rome, to Tiberius Caesar, and how, upon his being accused by his own freedman, he was bound. How also he was set at liberty by Caius after Tiberius's death, and was made king of the Tetrarchy of Philip. In other words, he was the Tetrarch of the Tetrarchy, mm-hmm. Not king. They use that word very loosely.
Right.
All right, section 1. I'm highlighting here. A little before the death of Herod, the king, Agrippa, lived at Rome and was generally brought up and conversed with Drusus, the emperor, Tiberius's son, and contracted a friendship with Antonia, the wife of Drusus the Great, who had his mother Bernice in great esteem and was very desirous of advancing her son. Now, as Agrippa was by nature magnanimous,
very much so.
And generous in the presents he made, in other words, he paid everybody off, while his mother was alive, this inclination of his mind did not appear, for he was not able to avoid her anger for such extravagance.
Oh, okay.
You schmuck, you spend your family fortune.
Right?
What, you must sugar?
Yeah.
But when Bernice was dead, and he was left to his own conduct, he spent a great deal extravagantly in his daily way of living, and a great deal in the immoderate presents he made, and those chiefly among Caesar's freedmen, in order to gain their assistance.
Of course.
In so much that he was, in a little time, reduced to poverty. He was nigger rich for a while, and he spent it all.
Right.
Oh, well.
And his influence didn't increase. Nope. So he wasted all that money.
And could not live at Rome any longer. Tiberius also forbade the friends of his deceased son to come into his sight, because on seeing them, he should be put in mind of his son, and his grief would thereby be revived.
Get out of my sight, Jew.
Over to you.
Right. Section 2. For these reasons, he went away from Rome and sailed to Judea. And let me just comment here. The fact that, starting with Antipater, Herod's father, the Roman court had, you know, hosted all of these Edomite Jews until this point in time, several generations, and all these historical figures, many of the sons were raised in Rome under the auspices of the various Caesars, that how anybody could think that this Judean history, this Judahite history, is made up, fictitious, given all of the interrelationships between the Roman emperors and the Herods, all of it verifying the Gospels. How anybody could still suspect the Gospels of being fraudulent is beyond me. If that's fraudulent, then so is all the history of the Roman Empire. Okay? Because these two families were so intertwined from the very beginning, starting with Antipater, who bribed Julius Caesar with a large sum of money, according to Josephus, to place his son Herod as the leader, the governor of Galilee. That was his first position. Okay, so if all of this history of the Bible is false, then so is the history of the Romans, because they are totally intertwined, as we can see from Josephus's history here. Okay, so let's continue. For these reasons, he went away from Rome and sailed to Judea, but in evil circumstances, being dejected with the loss of that money which he once had, and because he had not wherewithal to pay his creditors, who were many in number, and such as gave no room for escaping them. Whereupon he knew not what to do, so he was like a plebeian. So for shame of his present condition, he retired to a certain tower at Malatha in Idumea, went back home, and had thoughts of killing himself. But his wife, Cypris, perceived his intentions and tried all sorts of methods to divert him from his taking such a course. So she sent a letter to his sister Herodias, who was now the wife of Herod the Tetrarch, and let her know Agrippa's present design and what necessity it was which drove him thereto, and desired her, as a kinswoman of his, to give him her help and to engage her husband to do the same, since she saw how she alleviated those of her husband's trouble all she could, although she had not the like wealth to do it withal. So they sent for him and allotted him Tiberias for his habitation. not to King Ahud Terabaris, who had just died, but the place named after him, and appointed him some income of money for his maintenance, and made him a magistrate of that city by way of honor to him. The Jews take care of their own, do they not, Pastor Steve?
Yes, okay. I would say they do.
Okay, but they didn't give him money that he could spend thrift away, just enough to survive, okay? How many Jewish families have Jewish children that live that way, right? Okay.
A lot of them,
Yet did not Herod long continue in that resolution of supporting him, though even that support was not sufficient for him. For as once they were at a feast at Tyre, and in their cups and reproaches were cast upon one another, Agrippa thought there was not to be born, while Herod hit him in the teeth with his poverty. Well, was that literally or not, or figuratively hitting him in the teeth? And with his owing his necessary food to him. So he went to Flaccus, one that had been consul, and had been a very great friend to him at Rome formerly, and was now president of Syria. Okay, so how did Flaccus handle this? Back to you for section 3.
Oh, boy. In other words, hit him in the teeth with his poverty. He threw it in his face.
Right.
What he did, you know, he brought it to light.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of the stuff that Trump is doing to some of the Democrats.
Right.
I remember when you said this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uncle Joe, have you flip-flopped on us, Uncle Joe?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
my.
Uncle Joe Biden. Yeah. Oh, man. America is in serious trouble, folks. Serious trouble.
He's a joke.
Oh, yeah.
Total joke. But Flaccus received him kindly, and he lived with him. Flaccus had also with him there Aristobulus, who was indeed Agrippa's brother, but was at variance with him. They were quarreling. Mm-hmm. Yet did not their hostility to one another hinder the friendship of Flaccus to them both. But still they were honorably treated by him.
Hmm.
However, Aristobulus did not abate of his ill will to Agrippa until at length he brought him into ill terms with Flaccus, the occasion of bringing on which estrangement was this. The Damascenes were at difference with the Sidonians about their limits. That's the people of Damascus, Syria,
mm-hmm.
and the Sidonians, the people of Zidon.
Right. Okay? Tyre. Mm-hmm.
And when Flaccus was about to hear the cause between them, they understood that Agrippa had a mighty influence upon him, so they desired that he would be of their side. And for that favor, promised him a great deal of money.
Oh, money, money, money.
Mm-hmm. So he was zealous in assisting the Damascenes as far as he was able.
Okay.
Now, Aristobulus had gotten intelligence of this promise of money to him and accused him to Flaccus of the same.
Wow.
And when, upon a thorough examination of the matter, it appeared plainly so to be, he rejected Agrippa out of the number of his
Agrippa is rejected again. My goodness. The unhappy Jew.
So he was reduced to the utmost necessity, and he was very poor. Evidently.
Yeah.
He just cut him off. Aww.
Yeah.
And came to Ptolemais, and because he knew not where else to get a livelihood, he thought to sail to Italy. But as he was restrained from doing so by want of money, he desired Marcius, who was his freedman, to find some method for procuring him so much as he wanted for that purpose by borrowing such a sum of some person or other.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marcius desired of Peter, not New Testament
not the Apostle Peter,
who was the freedman of Bernice, Agrippa's mother, and by the right of her testament was bequeathed to Antonia to lend so much upon Agrippa's own bond and security.
Lending money to this guy?
But he accused Agrippa of having defrauded him of certain sums of money, and so obliged Marcius, when he made the bond of 20,000 Attic drachmas, to accept of 2,500 drachma as less than he desired, which the other allowed because he could not help it. Upon the receipt of this money, Agrippa came to Anthedon and took shipping and was going to set sail, but Herennius Capitu, who was the procurator of Yamnia, sent a band of soldiers to demand of him 300,000 drachmas of silver, which were by him owing to Caesar's treasury while he was at Rome.
Oh, my goodness.
And so forced him to stay. They took his traveling money.
Right.
Okay.
And whatever he was going to use it for went up in smoke again.
Oh, well.
You know, this guy reminds me of Karl Marx. Karl Marx was a total ne'er-do-well. And if it weren't for the fact that the Rothschilds and others were giving him money to live off of, he would have done absolutely nothing with his life except to stay in debt, abandoned his wife and family, and was a wasteful person his whole life. So Agrippa and Karl Marx are very much of the same type of personality, same Jewish personality. Back to you.
He then pretended that he would do as he directed him, but when night came on, he cut his cables and went off and sailed to Alexandria, where he desired Alexander the Alabark.
Uh-huh.
What is the Alabark?
Oligarch.
Right. I'll look it up. There's a footnote.
Maybe somebody in the chat room.
The governor of the Judeans there.
Okay.
He's the governor. Okay. The Alabark. To lend him 200,000 drachmas. He said he would not lend it to him, but would not refuse it to Cypros, as greatly astonished at her affection to her husband and at the other instances of her virtue. So she undertook to repay it. Accordingly, Alexander paid them 5 talents at Alexandria, and promised to pay them the rest of that sum in Dicertia Puteoli. Okay. And this he did out of the fear he was in that Agrippa would soon spend it. So this Cypros set her husband free and dismissed him to go on with his navigation to Italy, while she and her children departed for Judea.
Okay, I tried all I could to help him, but he's nothing but a spendthrift and will never straighten himself out. That's your typical poor Jew.
Ah, such right? a schmuck.
Right? All right, section 4. And now Agrippa was come to Puteoli, whence he wrote a letter to Tiberius Caesar, who then lived at Caprea, and told him that he was come so far in order to wait on him and to pay him a visit. All right, I don't think Tiberius was in any mood to see Agrippa again. And desired that he would give him
persona non grata.
That's for sure. And desired that he would give him leave to come to Caprea. So Tiberius made no difficulty, but wrote to him in an obliging way in other respects, and withal told him he was glad of his safe return, and desired him to come to Caprea. And when he was come, he did not fail to treat him as kindly as he had promised to him in his letter. But the next day came a letter to Caesar from Herennius Capito, a mobster, to inform him that Agrippa had borrowed 300,000 drachma and not paid it at the time appointed. Oh, no.
Hey, you got this guy that ain't paid the bid there, Caesar.
Pay up or we break your legs.
We want to whack this guy.
right. But when it was demanded of him, he ran away like a fugitive. This is like New York City under the mob. Like a fugitive out of places under his government and put it out of his power to get the money of him. When Caesar had read this letter, he was much troubled at it and gave orders that Agrippa should be excluded from his presence until he had paid that debt. So how's he going to pay this debt? I mean, his credit was totally gone. Upon which he was no way daunted at Caesar's anger, but entreated Antonia, the mother of Germanicus, and Claudius, who was afterwards Caesar himself, to lend him those 300,000 drachmae that he might not be deprived of Tiberius's friendship.
They're borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. Borrowing from everybody.
Yeah, he's borrowing from Augustus to pay Tiberius. Amazing. So out of regard to the memory of Bernice, his mother, for those two women were very familiar with one another, and out of regard of his and Claudius's education together, she lent him the money. Wow. And upon the payment of this debt, there was nothing to hinder Tiberius's friendship to him. After this, Tiberius Caesar recommended to him his grandson and ordered that he should always accompany him when he went abroad. But upon Agrippa's kind reception by Antonia, he betook him to pay his respects to Caius, who was her grandson, and in very high reputation by reason of the goodwill they bear his father. Now there was one Thallus, a freedman of Caesar's, of whom he borrowed a million of drachmae. Let me start over. Now there was one Thallus, a freedman of Caesar's, of whom he borrowed a million drachmae, and thence repaid Antonia the debt he owed her. Okay, again, still borrowing from people to pay other people off. And by spending the overplus in paying his court to Caius, became a person of great authority with him. All right, so just like a typical Jew, he borrows money to gain influence with people and then has no way to pay it back. Back to you, section 5.
Oh, man.
Amazing stuff.
Now, as the friendship which Agrippa had for Caius was come to a great height, there happened some words to pass between them, as they were once in a chariot together concerning Tiberius. Agrippa praying to God, for they too sat by themselves, that Tiberius might soon go off the stage and leave the government to Caius, who was in every respect more worthy of it. Now, Eutychus, who was Agrippa's freedman and drove his chariot, heard these words, and at that time said nothing of them.
Uh-oh, somebody overheard the conversation, just like 9/11. Right?
Yep. But when Agrippa accused him of stealing some garments of his, which was certainly true, he ran away from him. But when he was caught and brought before Piso, who was governor of the city, and the man was asked why he ran away, he replied that he had something to say to Caesar that tended to his security and preservation. So Piso bound him and sent him to Capria.
Oh, man.
But Tiberius, according to his usual custom, kept him still in bonds, being a delayer of affairs. If ever there was any other king or tyrant, that was so. For he did not admit ambassadors quickly, and no successors were dispatched away to governors or procurators of the provinces that had been formally sent, unless they were dead. Thus it was that he was so negligent in hearing the causes of prisoners.
Oh boy.
In so much that when he was asked by his friends what was the reason of his delay in such cases, he said that he delayed to hear ambassadors, lest upon their quick dismission, other ambassadors should be appointed and return upon him. So he should bring trouble upon himself in their public reception and dismission. This is convoluted.
He was a poor administrator, put it that way.
Poor administrator.
Okay.
He permitted those governors who had been sent once to their government to stay there a long while, out of regard to the subjects that were under them. For all governors are naturally disposed to get as much as they can.
Yes, they are.
and those who are not to remain there, but stay a short time and are uncertain when they shall be turned out, do the more severely hurry themselves on to fleece the people.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah, just didn't want to deal with these governors.
Yep.
Because, they irritated him.
Yeah.
Right?
But that if their government be long continued to them, they are at last satiated with the spoils, as having gotten a vast deal, and so become at length less sharp in their pillaging, okay. But that if successors are sent quickly, the poor subjects who are exposed to the government as a prey will not be able to bear the new ones.
Right.
While they shall not have the same time allow themselves their predecessors had filled themselves, and so grew more unconcerned
about getting more. Yeah.
And this because they are removed before they have had time for their oppressions.
Okay, so in other words, Tiberius's reasoning was, I don't want to replace governors because the new ones will just resort to robbing the people, while the current governors have already satiated themselves with robbing the people, so this is a better course of action. Okay.
Yeah.
That's his reasoning.
The trouble you know is
right.
better than the trouble you don't know.
Right. Exactly.
He gave them an example to show his meaning. A great number of flies came about the sore places of a man that had been wounded, upon which one of the standers-by pitied the man's misfortune, and thinking he was not able to drive those flies away himself, was going to drive them away for him. Mm-hmm. 175. But he prayed him to let them alone. The other was, by way of reply, ask him the reason of such a preposterous proceeding in preventing relief from his present misery, to which he answered, if you drive these flies away, you will hurt me worse, for these are already full of my blood, and they do not crowd about me nor pain me so much as before, but are something more remiss, while the fresh ones that come almost famished and find me quite tired already will be my destruction.
Okay. All right.
Oh, boy.
But in the meantime, they lay eggs in his wounds. Right?
Yeah. For this cause, therefore, it is that I am myself careful not to send such new governors perpetually to those my subjects, because they're going to suck them dry,
right?
Who are already sufficiently harassed by many oppressions, as may, like these flies, further distress them, and so, beside their natural desire of gain, may have this additional incitement to it, that they expect to be suddenly deprived of that pleasure which they take in it. And as a further attestation to what I say of the dilatory nature of Tiberius, I appeal to this practice itself, for although he was emperor 22 years, he set in all only two procurators to govern the nation of the Judeans. Gratus and his successor in the government, Pilate.
Mm-hmm.
Nor was he in one way of acting with respect to the Judeans, and in another with respect to the rest of his subjects. He further informed them that even in the hearing of the causes of prisoners, he made such delays because immediate death to those that must be condemned to die would be an alleviation of their present miseries, while those wicked wretches have not deserved any such favor. But I do it that by being harassed with the present calamity, they may undergo greater misery.
Hmm. Okay.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's a very interesting account of Tiberius's mentality. I think it's due to the fact that under Tiberius, there was so much inflation going on, and we talked about this at length yesterday on the one-to-one show. And again, I encourage people to download that show. It's already uploaded in the archives about the Babylonian money system and how the Roman Empire was afflicted by funny money and corruption, just like today. And Tiberius was endeavoring to do something about it. So he was very, what's the best way of putting it? Very careful about spending money and collecting money, okay? And so when he replaced governors, money tended to get lost, right? So because
it's like all the Pentagon, they can't find $3 billion dollars.
Yeah, $2 trillion. $2 trillion.
Or $2 trillion. I didn't know the exact figure.
Yeah.
You know, these there are three shows on EFR that are related by the subject matter. Mm-hmm. We've got one-to-one. We've mm-hmm. got this show, and we got Signs of the End Times.
Yeah, on Wednesday.
Andy.
Yeah.
And we're all discussing this all intertwines.
Yeah.
So
the fact is that Tiberius was trying to get the economy of Rome under control. He was actually a very good Caesar, a very good dictator. But as time progressed, he found that he couldn't get it under control, and he became very despondent and became, you know, very treacherous in his own right. He started out being good and trying to get Rome's accounts in order, but found that he couldn't. Why? Because the moneylenders were in control, and he could not get control of the moneylenders, which is how the world is going to go down, folks. It will begin with the economic collapse of Mystery Babylon.
When the Ponzi scheme gets exposed and the pyramid scheme collapses, it's going to be chaos.
Right.
And that's why I keep telling everybody, get ready, get food, get water purification. You're not going to have any luxuries at all. You may not even have heat in the winter. You may not have gas for your car, but you'll have food and water, and you can huddle together and at least survive for a certain period of time.
Right.
Otherwise, you're gone.
Yeah.
Because the grocery stores are going to be empty. No trucks are going to be running. There's going to be rioting and violence. Nobody's going to be making deliveries.
That's
It's going to be bad. It's going to be very, very bad.
No more vegetable truck in the alley.
Our generation has not seen hard times like this.
Mm-hmm.
The generation before us, which would be us, Eli and myself, only saw some of it. But we saw a lot of good times in America in our lives also.
Right. Yeah.
but it's all coming to an end. It's collapsing. It's
getting constantly worse, and as the economy continues to
degenerate.
And hungry
people that are already have a predilection to violence are going to use that violence.
That's
right. And
you're
going to have to be able to fight.
Whatever semblance of the control they might have, which is basically based on the receipt of their monthly welfare check, right? When the money collapses and their welfare check won't buy any food, those
and
store shelves are going to be robbed.
Stores anyway.
Right?
It's all gone.
Yeah. You remember Hurricane Katrina?
Guys like me with all these MREs.
Mm-hmm. Military rationed, what does it stand for? People know what you're talking
Meals
about.
Meals ready to eat.
Meals ready to eat. Okay. So, and they last for many years. It's kind of like, prepping. It's prepper food.
Well,
right?
Prep food.
It's better than none if you're starving.
You can eat one of these a day and survive. Uh-huh. You don't need three square meals.
No, that's right.
You and me and everybody else could probably lose a little weight. It wouldn't hurt us at all. Okay.
Yes.
So, hey, you know.
Get ready, folks.
You're
going
to lose weight whether you want to or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
This is section
six, but it's a very, very long section, and so I would just like to point out that Doc Waterman and I did a show on Restoration Hour last night, and it did not record for some reason. I'm going to try to find it, but we talked at length about Libya. Hillary Clinton and the Rothschilds, and the reason why the Rothschilds had to get kill Muammar Gaddafi and get rid of Libya was because
banking.
He was planning on having a gold-backed currency, and his people, the citizens of his country, loved the guy because he was so kind to his citizens. Yet the mass media constantly portrayed him as a dictator. No, he was loved by the people. He would give new families, a man and a woman who wanted to get married and have children, he gave them the equivalent of $23,000 to start a family. I mean, not even Obama gave away. And then they'd be self-sufficient, gave them land. You know, so they could become farmers or start a business or what have you. I mean, very, very few dictators are, this kind to their people. So, but the reason that Rothschilds had to get rid of him was because of his gold-backed currency that he was getting ready to start printing and spending in the African continent. Now, the Rothschilds could not have competition like that. That would have brought down their funny money empire quicker rather than later. And so that's why, they had to get rid of Gaddafi. Now, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were intimately involved in getting rid of Gaddafi. And Hillary Clinton made a personal fortune of $40 billion in the process. That's why Hillary Clinton had such a big grin on her face when she said, "We came, we saw, he died." Right? Mainstream media is not reporting any of this, folks. Not a word about Hillary's killing. Now, remember, when Hillary first came on the scene, she made a killing in the stock market. Remember that? She had inside information and made millions on the stock market because of the inside information. Hillary Clinton is the brainchild of the Rothschilds, and she does their bidding at every turn, and she does it gladly. If she is not the great whore of Revelation, I don't know who is. She personifies this. Yeah, zombie Zionist apocalypse. So, I read the clock wrong. I see we have about 9 minutes left. I thought we were under five. So let me, but this is something that, watch Hillary Clinton. Joe Biden is going to be her successor in the Democratic Party. He's every bit as evil as she is. All right, section six. On this account, Go ahead.
I really don't think you're going to be able to get through this one, buddy.
No? Okay, yeah, it's a long section.
So let's talk a little more about this. I mean, yeah. we've really done our homework for today.
Right.
This false flag thing with the ship in Iran, they're trying to foment war with Iran desperately.
Right.
They're absolutely, and because Iran has their own bank again.
Right. Okay. And Russia's not cooperating with the Rothschilds either.
They're self-sufficient. They grow their own food. They make their own steel.
Mm-hmm.
They make their own copper. They make their own guns. They make their own ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
They're self-sufficient. They're not relying.
Unlike the Israeli state.
They're not relying on the international jury to provide them with goods and services. They're free people. Now, you think Jaime is going to stand for that? No.
No.
Come on.
No. Not no. Yeah, and you know, we talked about this with Andy as well, and we're going to do another show about it this coming Wednesday. War is the Jews' harvest. Whenever, but they plan their wars in conjunction with potential economic collapses, so they can use the war as the excuse and to hide the fact that the economic collapse is of their making and their doing, right? So sometimes they can force it to happen. Sometimes it happens in spite of themselves, okay? So they're going to need a war. When the economy starts collapsing, they're going to need another war. And so they can blame all the economic problems on the war. Right?
Right.
Yeah. The Vietnam War was planned, totally planned by the Rothschilds in order to degenerate American society. All right. So it was under the auspices of the Vietnam War that they introduced faggotry, feminism, abortion, the pill. You name it. You know, Pandora's box was opened in the 1960s. They could have not gotten away with any of this if it were a simultaneous war in Vietnam. Okay? War is always a distraction they create in order to take their people's minds off the current economic and domestic problems. Okay? Kind of like what George Orwell said in his book 1984, right? Okay? And now we have the continuous war on terror, the non-existent terrorists, who they finance anyway, right? So this global war on terror is just a continuous operation to hide the fact that they are the real terrorists and the real warmongers, while the people think they're God's chosen people. This is crazy, folks. This is absolutely crazy, but this is the reality of the current political economic situation. Back to you, Steve.
Okay, and Swamp Fox puts the Cruz Kane anti-Semitism resolution unanimously passed in the Senate.
Okay. Very bad. Very bad. Now, it does not have the force of law. Okay. Yeah, Brother Abear, war is the mode of Edom. Yeah, it's what do you call it when you scramble the letters? Yeah, war is the Jews' harvest. And thanks, Swamp Fox, for that. Yeah, so they had a global initiative, a definition of anti-Semitism. I think the three of us discussed that, me, you, and Andy, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. But it does not have the force of law. It does not. It's just a resolution. This is what we say it is. But they don't make a penalty, a legal penalty, for anybody who violates the resolution. Okay?
Yet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, the Jews will never give up until they can put some teeth into these resolutions and turn them into actual laws.
Guess what, you boys? We're never going to give up.
Anymore. That's right. That's right. You're going to have to take our guns away before you can bite.
That's all I can say. You're just hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got nothing coming.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Right. And their end is just like the end of the Herodians. Okay? It was caused by the collapse of the Roman economy, which was essentially the world economy of the day. And the Jews were part and instrumental in being the moneylenders and the middlemen of that empire. Okay, as the Jews are today. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Brother Hebert also posts that Times of Israel, after Israel visit, the Florida governor signs bill against anti-Semitism into law. Okay, whether that has any teeth to it, whether that can be enforced.
It would really be in Florida because Florida is just overrun with them.
Right, right. And communists from Cuba, right?
Well, and what's the difference?
Yeah, right. Well, not all communists are Jews, but they're still practicing Judaism, whether they realize it or not. Okay? So this kind of corruption will, you know, it's basically the same as the Herods trying to enforce their law over Yahweh's laws. That's the Jews are doing exactly the same thing today on a world scale. It is Mystery Babylon, folks. It's just a matter of time before the system collapses and we have anarchy all over the planet. They're going to try to get it under control by making wars against the rebels, but ultimately what they do is they support both sides in every war. Okay? Well, sooner or later, you're going to kill your allies, and your allies are going to turn against you, as the book of Obadiah predicted.
Yep.
Yep. So, folks, yeah, the gay mafia. Right? So the Jews are behind the gay mafia, the Jewish mafia, the international child trafficking mafia, you name it. They're behind every single one of them. And you think that this kind of political corruption can last indefinitely? No, it can't.
Well, I've done the theme of long hot summer. Mm-hmm. This summer is going to be full of violence when the streets get hot and they're sweating and they're uncomfortable and they're stoned on something and something goes down. It's
they're going to try to outlaw the New Testament,
and it's got to spread from city to city.
Yes,
and
so be it. It's been predicted, and it will happen. We just don't know exactly when, but it is coming, folks. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you all next time.
ADL.
Jewry. Thank you.